Let's welcome everyone here. And I think we are now forming a quorum. We can continue with our meeting. The meeting is declared open. Today we are considering a report, a presentation of updated report from SARS. We were supposed to meet with the Competition Commission, but they have since apologized due to international commitments. So we'll only meet with the SARS to hear what do they have for us in terms of their work related to the framework, the framework agreement on the response economic on economic crisis. We, in terms of our meeting, our program, are expecting them to be here at 10 o'clock. We have decided to deal with the minutes. I know we have few sets of minutes that we could not dispose of in our previous meeting, and we'll take as much as we can until 10 o'clock, and then if they arrive before we finish, we'll then pause and consider their business. Okay, can we then deal with the minutes of the 19th of June? Can we look at the minutes of the 19th of June? Page one of the minutes. Can you confirm page one of the minutes? Page two. Page three. Page four. Page five. Page six. Any confirmation? Or any mover for the confirmation of the minute?
74.
Okay.
Chapter 4, we adopt. I was going to say page 1. I'm sorry that we have passed with that. I know that Comrade Mabasa is not happy when the spelling is Mabaso. He always reminds us to say it's Mabasa.
He was still Mabaso then.
No, on the 19th of October.
On the 19th of June, he was still Mabaso. He only alerted us to the changes in the previous meeting. So I don't think it's our mistake, Comrade. Thank you very much. Any confirmation? Are we reading them now? Are we happy with the content? Does it reflect what really transpired in the meeting? Colleagues, we circulated this minute in the meeting, the previous meeting.
Colleague Chair?
Yes,
in the previous meeting. No, I think, I had studied the minutes, and I had noted some typos, but I noticed that all those typos are corrected, so I move for the adoption of
it. Thank you very much. Any seconder? Dr. Rabi? Thank you very much. I can now sign the document. The document, yeah. The next set of minutes, let's deal with the minutes of the 9th of July, page 1. You missed Helen in the first meeting.
Yeah.
She was absent.
Yeah.
June, July, I was still not part of this committee. It's only in the beginning of
No, no, no. Okay, we'll deal with that, with Helen, because I thought you were part of it. Okay, the next page 2. Remember, that was our shortest meeting ever. Last page. Any confirmation? Great Goyama? There's a mover, any seconder? Dr. Mabas.
Hey,
that's fine, Helen. I said to you.
Thank you.
So he must work very hard. I'm challenging him, actually. Okay. The minute so adopted. Next minute is of the 28th of August.
My turning there on the chair.
Yes.
28.
Okay. You see, when you started, actually we've changed that from the moment you told us about that change of swimming. But prior that, we'll continue with Mabas. Prior to that, it will be Mabas until... I'm okay. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Any mover? Let's hear from the others who've been quiet. Okay. Thank you very much. That was fantastic and very good.
Also point out, committee, that in round about May, June, I have communicated to the Ministry of Parliament as well as to the Ministry of 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 not yet.
Yes.
Because I thought they would do that in what you just said.
No, they haven't. Even the documents, even from our second page. Thank you. Any seconder? Minutes of the session for October. I take it that because this was 3 minutes, we only sent yesterday. We could not go through them. Can neither copy you pardon? Let's go through the minutes.
chairperson. This means the page 3, item 9.
Number 5, under the EG there, if there is a slack in franchising, then people, I think it should be, will be moved to, so that we introduce B. But then I think under discussion, it was also added on the same sentence, you know, that utilizing contractors on a part-time basis should be done with caution. You know, I think there was emphasis from the committee. The same sentence, but that's an addition. An addition that, you know, it must be done with caution. I think the committee was strong in making that point. I don't know whether we should add it or we must say what stands there suffice. Thanks. That I think we should. That question means that as far as possible, especially under the present financial conditions, the department must avoid utilizing outside skills. It must strive to utilize internal skills. Only go to those externals where it definitely can't do it itself. Because, you know, it's very easy to quickly... But that was the context. Thanks.
Thank you. Still on page 2. Ma'am, Protetti?
Yeah, Chairperson, for me to say, maybe point 7 is also under discussion. I'm not sure. Yeah, on point 7, I may not have an appropriate wording for now, but the members will assist. That we did raise a concern that the information provided was not exactly what we requested from the partners.
Yes, you may consider that these are presentations in bullets, actually. All this numbering here are from the presentation of the CEO. And then we'll get to discussions, and that's where you will then note what you're saying. Can we go to page 3? That's under discussions, then you can come in. Dr. Wang and then Comrade Mabasa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think item 9 is for this fitting company under the district. This one, they send this report to me, to us. It's a Friday, it's the 16th or the 23rd. I confusion. I remember it's 16th. Same week. Or next week. Oh, I see.
saying there were 16 in terms of 15, or 15. I remember 15. But if you recall, I did talk to the secretary about this. If you recall well, there was a question that I remember asking related to this particular issue. Because there were 15 as listed in that block, but then when they made a breakdown, there were more than. For instance, I'll give an example of Mpumalanga. They said there's one in Mpumalanga, but then there were several companies, you know, that they were funding under Mpumalanga. So I said they should correct this, but in as far as the presentation is concerned, they had 15, and then that's what we said they should give us information on, and then verify the other numbers. Yes. Okay. Comrade Mabasa.
Comrade Chair, on the same line, it looks like we could improve the language.
Mm-hmm.
Just before 15, we could introduce funded there, so that we are able to use, to remove the D on the distressed and also remove the funded after the bracket. It, you know, it reads funny. It doesn't read too good the way it's said.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Tetsi, still on page 2. On page 3,
just to try and rephrase what I said before, that we requested that the breakdown should be in terms of race, gender, the type of business, and the amount
you?
Of the fund. Yes, I'm not
where
sure.
Where are you in terms of this?
Oh, point nine. I think it's the same as it covers point 7 that I've alluded to. That's a list of names of companies funded by the IDC. I'm not sure as to whether we should develop a grid, like a table, to show exactly what you requested.
Yes, thank you. Still on page 3.
It's a very minor, really, but under 12, after Mr. Zalk, it looks like we should have it in the past tense. So that it becomes responded.
Then he must take out the comma after IDC and put it after Mr. Zhao.
Yeah.
Comma.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry to take you back number 11. Thank you.
point 11. I think it needs to be
about
10. Okay. Any other? I think
if we can just think through together, all of us, on number 12, the about fifth line, just the one, the line that has EG, intensive, compared to the funding approvals. I can't propose how we should write it, but read the number 12 from the bottom. When I number 12. Line, I mean, about line 5 from the bottom, but number 12. That sentence that ends with EG mining. I wonder if we can't improve it.
The IDC indicates that they're probably the biggest financier in the sector. Commercial banks are hesitant to enter into the sector. Should we put in the textile sector, man? The sectors can mean anything there. Just to get clarity on that, I'd say we could always say textile sector.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, am I there? I think that might more sense.
Clothing and textiles. Okay. Are you comfortable?
Just as a consistency, as we go on, is this how DTI wants us to abbreviate it? Because we are going to use this word, or this word is used many times. So must we say, to use the abbreviation, we must use more small letters?
So we think we that's how we must also fix that. I'm just saying this because, you know, it's really easy to find ourselves moving from capital to small, where we are commonly in place.
Okay. Are you okay? I think mainly I need to look at the wording of some of this. I'm looking at the whole paragraph 15. I'm looking at paragraph 15, 16. I think it's just a matter of, I think we're in a hurry when we're writing this minute. You can show that. Can you look at that without really pointing to those issues? You can see I've made corrections here, and then we'll deal with that. Page 17, page 4.
Yeah.
Okay, the numbering of discussions, I think it should be different from that one of the under presentation. The numbering of it, because it's like presentation is continuing.
Oh.
Whereas we are under discussions now. Do you understand this? Okay. Can we move on to page 4?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Let's put the separator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2-4. And a 20.
Twenty-two,
yeah. Have your mic on,
One of the areas that the DTI is looking to push the IDC towards is how to maximize, the developmental impact of this project. One of the areas the DTI is looking to push the IDC towards. Okay. I was just worried about pushing, but if the House is comfortable with that formulation, it's too colloquial.
We welcome any form of amendment.
And DDI is looking to focus. One of the areas that DDI is looking to focus the IDC towards, or direct or redirect.
We take redirect. Okay. Next question.
Yes, just to take you back a little bit on point 20, the second line after the comma. If teachers in the house can assist in reworking it, the wedding.
On the resolution, I thought that would be said to the chair. Submission of good name. Was that the final position?
Yeah, that was the final.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, okay, on the same issue under resolution, exactly what they've raised earlier on, but I think for us not to send them back again is to develop, you know, a table of what we exactly want from them. Yes, because I just have a sense that we're not going to get what we want, not unless we give example of a table.
Okay. Thank you. Otherwise, can we get any confirmation with the amendment? And, Mr. Mabas.
I'm not sure, but of course, this, the secretary will be more, will direct us better. But on that last bullet on Tuesday, on Tuesday, 20th October, I mean, it's a standardly used phrase. Do we say to the next meeting on Tuesday, or do we say the next meeting scheduled for, or, but it looks like on sounds a bit awkward, né? Just so that if it can be looked at.
Thank you very much. You are moving.
With the amendment.
Thanks. Any seconder? Thank you very much. I don't know whether we, or this was in relation to ICC, and then we have the one from the the IDC, no, from the Labor Department. I think what you did is a mistake. You didn't provide us with the information. Anyone who has, who doesn't have the labor, huh? Can we get just 2 minutes to go through this, especially the... Because we'll be focusing more on the discussions and the resolution. 2 minutes to look at the minutes.
that point 14. I remember that the concerns you raised were not in one, like to say we need to review the labor brokering. We had other members saying prohibit means doing away with it completely, and we have others saying it needs to be reviewed, like maybe regulate. So we're not talking with one voice. If we can highlight it.
Thank you, Chair. Number 12, the line number 3 from the bottom of that sentence. The Department of Labor indicated that they need engagement or
it's accepted as a matter of time for a change. The, although these are little points really, on 8, if we can remove the there just before the sitter, and then on 9, I propose we introduce a question mark after retrenched. Thanks, Commissioner.
Because the way we have started the sentence.
We must also contextualize the question, the fifth point in the last sentence, right? On the question of whether the funding is sufficient. I think the context was around the target, but they did not have clear targets. What happens is the interest is more than.
Okay. We tend to talk without the mic on. All right. Are we otherwise okay on page 3? Can we go to page 4? I'm worried about time now because the department is supposed to be here. Okay. We'll consider. Okay. Let's get the confirmation.
I move.
Thank you, Mangjuli. Who's seconding? Dr. Wong, thank you very much. Then move on to the next item. What I wanted to say is whether we want to consider the issue around matters arising out of the minutes that we just adopted. we'll await the submission of documents, and then we'll then deal with the documents in the next meeting.
No, I wanted to come before you amended your statement. Because I was going to say it will be wise if at the end of the meeting, then you just highlight the issues to be followed, so that in future we can be able to track all those issues which we highlighted. But what you have said, I think I'm also covered to say maybe let's wait for the responses from the department. But in future, it would be wise to, at the end, just to have the issues to be followed.
Is that our understanding, all of us? Do we agree with what Mr. Dudley said? Okay, thank you very much. Can we take the opportunity to welcome colleagues from SAR? You're welcome. Can we start by introducing ourselves so that you will then in turn do the same? We have, I'll start from my extreme left. Right, I mean. Rascal Birma's work now. Okay, we have Mr. Ngonyama, who is the member from the COAP, member of the committee representing COAP. We have the secretary of the committee, Mr. Kose. Then on my immediate left, I have Mr. Ntuli, also the whip of the committee from the ANC. And then Ms. Bengu, who's also a member from the ANC. Mr. Mabasa, a member from the ANC. Dr. Huang, a member from the ANC. Mem Sotesi, a member from the ANC, and Mem Line from the ANC. Those are our members. We have also Dr. Rabi, who's requested to be, here he comes, from DA, representing DA in the committee. Those are our members. I must introduce the parliamentary liaison from the department, officer from the department of the, it's the parliamentary liaison of the minister, actually, from the Department of Economic Development. Those are the people that I would want to introduce. We have the media here. We also have the okay. Can we then allow members from SAS to introduce themselves? I don't know who's leading the delegation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee. I am leading the delegation. My name is Jean Ravele. I'm the Chief Officer for Customs and Border Management in SAR. On my right, I've got Ms. Cindy August, who is our parliamentary liaison person for SAR. Next to me, I've got Mr. Eric Kick, who is responsible for customs policy and strategy. At the back there, I've got on my immediate left, Mr. Patrick Matlosi, who is responsible for customs risk. Next to him, there's Mr. Mtsebisi Basi, who is responsible for planning and performance monitoring and evaluation in customs. Thank you, Chair. Ravele.
Ravele.
R-A-V-E-L-E.
Ravele, okay. God says it's an Italian surname. Okay, you're welcome. Thank you very much. We did give you the what you expected from the committee, and we would now appreciate if you can give us the presentation from your side. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. We received the notes on what was expected. We prepared the presentation to cover in the main the clothing, textile, footwear, and leather sector, as it is the one most hit by the issue around commercial import fraud. The first slide, Chair, depicts our spread nationally as customs. That's our national footprint. We are at, we've got 42 offices across the country, which are mainly situated at ports of entry. And we've got some inland offices like Pretoria, Johannesburg, Port Elizabeth, and Durban. We are at 10 international airports, 19 designated land border posts, 5 sea ports, 2 inland rail ports, 2 inland sea ports in Johannesburg and Pretoria, and 3 international mail centers. That's the Durban International Mail Post Office, the Cape Town one, and Johannesburg. The mandate of customs is to facilitate trade, protect the economy and society from illegal importation of goods that could be prohibited and restricted, or against protect community against dumping. We also, in our own little way, contribute to enhancing border security in the country. So under facilitation of legitimate trade, Chair, we do that through application of some modern techniques. We have enhanced our systems. We now get advanced cargo information. We know what's coming before it reaches our shores, so that containers don't have to spend more time at the port waiting to be cleared. So by the time the containers come, we sort of have a fair idea of what's in there and which containers to stop on the basis of what risk mechanisms we applied. And we also cooperate pretty closely with other customs administrations. Before cargo arrives, we check with them if there are questions to be asked. And we've also done a lot in reducing the red tape that used to be there before. Today we've got electronic release system. Before, for cargo to be released, the agent will have to carry a piece of paper to the cargo shed or the shipping line and say, release my container. Now we have compelled the shipping lines and clearing agents to register online and send their entries online, and we issue them with release notes online. On the protection of the economy and society, I think, which is in the main the what concerns the committee here, is we implement trade agreements that have been entered into with some of our trade partners by the Department of Trade and Industry. We also ensure that we prevent smuggling, detect commercial import fraud, administer preferential trade schemes, and ensure compliance with incentive schemes that are entered into or that are designed by the Department of Trade and Industry. Since 9/11, Chairperson, the role of customs globally has sort of changed. Customs administrations are now focusing on enhancing security, and they play the role of the first line of protection in terms of goods that are coming into the country. So we have adopted certain standards in that regard. Like, for example, when goods leave South Africa to the U.S. at our port of Durban, there's a scheme that we've entered it with Canada and the U.S. where all containers going to the U.S. get scanned in South Africa so that they don't have to spend a lot of time when they get to the U.S. So what gets checked and cleared in Durban get easy access through to the U.S. because the risk has been checked here and they're given a clean bill of health. And I'm just trying to illustrate that the international landscape has sort of changed a little bit. Most of our biggest traders are shifting the risk to the exporting country. So the risk has been placed on us to ensure that goods going to the U.S. and Canada meet certain minimum security standards. That's the new role of customs. We also have got a scanner in Durban for goods coming into South Africa, which is meant really to detect whether there are prohibited goods there. We recently are enhancing it to detect components of weapons of mass destruction and certain chemicals. So the role that customs plays has changed in that regard. The next slide, Chairperson, talks to the role that SARS plays vis-a-vis that of the DTI. The DTI develops international trade policy, and in turn we implement that policy. They negotiate trade agreements, we implement the trade agreements. They develop regional economic strategies, and we implement that. They design and develop trade incentive schemes like the MIDP and the others. We implement and ensure compliance with those schemes. And they also develop import control measures. We also play a role of detection, prevention, and prevention of import fraud resulting from trade policy measures, agreements, and the schemes that I've referred to. So in the main, DTI is a policy maker. We are just the implementer as customs. We have done our own research into the problem in the clothing and textile sector. And we have divided into three components. The first one is current realities. One reality is that there's rapid growth in illicit trade across the board, be it smuggling of abalone from South Africa to the East, be it counterfeit cigarettes coming into South Africa from our neighboring countries like Zimbabwe and Mozambique, be it clothing and textile or imports from the East, some motor vehicle component parts like tires from the East coming into South Africa illicitly. And the fact that the play fields are not balanced between the importing community and the manufacturers in South Africa. And there's also justifiable demand from legitimate trade in South Africa to compel the importing community to comply with certain minimum standards. There's a general low level of compliance in that environment. The global economic meltdown has created a situation where fraudulent activity has started to thrive. People want to make up for the losses that they have had as a result of the meltdown. And we have experienced lack of whole government approach into dealing with these things. And there's a general lack of public awareness. As an example, people don't see anything wrong buying clothing from a boot of a car from someone that has gone to the East and brought four suitcases of counterfeit goods or handbags or anything. So general members of the public don't see the connection between that and job losses in the clothing and textile sector. The as part of the root causes chair, we the fact that South Africa, the South African market has been open to the international trade. It happened just after 1994. I think there was a need to reintegrate internationally, but there were certain safeguards that we didn't really think of, choosing our trading partners correctly, and so on and so forth. The other root cause is the sustained and steep surge of cheap imports, mainly from China. There's an issue around illegal importation, which entails undervaluation of goods, false declaration in terms of origin of goods and the tariff classification, rerouting of goods via third countries. I'll explain that in detail later. And misuse of duty rebates and credit schemes, like the DCCs within the sub, the SACU community. Okay.
In terms of the acronyms, can you just mention them in full?
Yeah, okay, I'll do that, sir. Thanks. There are some of the duty rebates and credit schemes I was referring to. There's a credit scheme called the Duty Credit Certificate, which gets issued on goods that are going to our SACU members within the Common Customs Union, the Southern African Customs Union. And the other component of illegal imports, Chairperson, is trade in counterfeit goods. We have also seen a surge in that regard. The one other root cause is, like any other state institution, there'll always be some rotten apples. We've got some corrupt officials in our system that we are trying by all means to get out of the system. Once we detect, we act swiftly and get them out. Who could be working in collusion with the some rogue traders in allowing easy passage of these goods that come into South Africa. There's a widespread and systemic under-declaration of goods in certain instances and certain tariff headings, certain commodities. The impact of all that, Chairperson, we have come to a conclusion that it is an adverse economic impact in that it continues to erode revenue due to the state. It has led to closure of clothing and textile manufacturers in South Africa and also led to job losses within that sector. These are the gaps that we also identified. I need to also say that we jointly identified these gaps within the NEDLAC setup. So the study that we conducted was conducted by both ourselves, the DTI, business, and within the NEDLAC environment. One of our findings was that there's a gap in terms of legislation and policy framework that we've got currently. Within NEDLAC, labor has raised an issue of customs designating certain ports of entry for clothing and textile. So if you are bringing in clothes from Indonesia, Malaysia, or China, they should come through a particular port. So what it meant is that at that port, you'll have the requisite skills to deal with those particular commodities. In that discussion, business has raised some concerns that this may lead to penalizing legitimate traders. who are not involved in any fraudulent activity. So if they are based in Cape Town or in PE and only Durban and Cape Town have been designated, they left to clear their goods in either Cape Town or Durban, which would mean that extra transportation costs and all that. These are some of the things that business is raising. There's still a discussion within NEDREC on these issues. The other one is the disconnect between the design and development of policy, as well as application of policy, trade agreements, trade schemes, and all that. There's been a historical disconnect between customs as the implementer and the Department of Trade and Industry as the policymaker. We're trying by all means now to close that gap, to bridge that gap that has been there historically. The other one is we haven't been really sharing information with trade, with labor, and some of our partners within NEDLEC, which has, I think, led to in part to the problem that we're talking about today. And it is a reality that within customs, we don't have enough skills to deal with the technical aspects of customs. Technical is determining the value of goods, determining the right tariff classification of goods, and also determining the origin of goods. And the reason for that, Chairperson, is in South Africa, there's no single educational institution that teaches a course in customs or trade facilitation or trade administration. So officers have to learn on the job, have to learn the tariff book. It's a very big book with a lot of chapters. They have to understand how to interpret the different tariff lines. This can only be learned on the job. So people who will understand the technical aspect of customs are those that have got years behind them in customs. We're trying to retain some of the people who have got 40 years in the service, because they are technical experts. We have tied them now to certain contracts to develop younger people that are coming into the system. So there are some historical deficits within customs. Before, there was no investment in it at all. Nobody needed a customs administration before 1994, because borders were responsibility of the police and the defense force then. But now the situation has changed, and that deficit is still with us. And we're trying by all means to close it. The other area where we are found to not to be really effective is on the investigations and audit part. Because of lack of those specialized skills that I've spoken about, Chairperson, we don't oftenly win many of our valuation cases. In cases where we work with the police commercial crime branch, you may find that they don't understand what happens within a customs environment. And that also leads to the criminal prosecution angle. We have made suggestions that we need a specialized criminal court that deals with commercial import fraud, because we're seeing it as a priority type of an area. We have identified, Chairperson, some high-risk areas within the SADC region. There's an issue around rerouting of goods to South Africa from our neighbors. What happens here is, you can move to the next slide. I'll illustrate it in this graph, Chair. If you can check, we're looking at top countries of origin for clothing and textile. That.
Your choice of, I don't know whether it's only myself who's affected, choice of colors, they're really, for us who have eye problems, I think they're really, really dealing with us terribly.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. And I can see also in terms of this handout that maybe in future we should correct that. Thank you.
And even, correct, sir, thank you. But even also the small letters, you know, some of us are aging, you know, really. So we are even shy to complain.
No, I Yeah, I think the concern is taken. We continue.
And Chair, there was no disrespect intended. What I wanted to illustrate in that graph, Chairperson, is that the most of the clothing, textile, leather, and footwear imports come from China. And number two is Zimbabwe. From China, which is very huge, the second one becomes Zimbabwe. And we know that in Zimbabwe there are no clothing and textile factories or weaveries. What normally happens in such cases, Chairperson, is goods will come from the east, from Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, to the port of Beira in Mozambique. From Beira, they get loaded onto a goods train, from Beira to Harare, where they get to some warehouse, they get repacked. And stickers are placed on the boxes made in Zimbabwe. South Africa has got a trade agreement with Zimbabwe that says certain commodities are duty-free. And so when they come through, it becomes very difficult to detect whether these have been made in Zimbabwe or the process of repackaging and blowing them has taken place. And we have been having a lot of difficulty in accessing that area to go and look at whether these clothes are manufactured in Harare or not. We had this problem in the early and mid-90s in Malawi, in Blantyre, where we sent our own investigators to go and have a look at whether this is happening or not. These importers may even bring incomplete clothes without buttons and certain things. So the stitching up of buttons will happen in that warehouse in Harare, so or in Blantyre, then they come in as made in Malawi. So this is one of the areas that we're looking at. It's a difficulty to try and police that. And by doing so, they are abusing the rules of origin. They are abusing the free trade agreements that we've got. Go back to that slide. That we've got with them. And also within the BLNS country, Botswana, Lesotho, some of these things happen because we are in the common BLNS is Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland. Because we are within the common customs union, there's no duty levied on intra-common customs union trade. So trade between South Africa and Lesotho, South Africa and Botswana, there's no revenue implication because we're within a common customs union. So goods will come destined for Lesotho. They'll go through to Lesotho, but come back to South Africa as being made in Lesotho. So we currently working on an MOU at a ministerial level between the Minister of Finance in Lesotho and Finance in South Africa. We want to agree on joint operation to try and deal with this thing. Lesotho has done a lot of work. I mean, they have, I think 2 months ago, arrested 2 CEOs of the main manufacturers there for some of these things. So they are cooperating. Botswana, we're talking to them also to get them to cooperate. It's a little bit difficult with Zimbabwe, but we believe we'll get there. Here, what we were trying to say, Chair, and I'm sorry, small font also, is that the imports of clothing and textiles contribute about 2% or 2.5% on average of the total imports value that customs handles. So you see that at the top, in terms of value, the top import commodity will be machinery and mechanical appliances. And the reason why it's top now is with the construction boom and infrastructure development by government. South African companies are importing a lot of these heavy machinery for constructing stadiums, roads, and new buildings. So there's been an increase there. So if you look at top 10, machinery and mechanical appliances tops it, and the second one is mineral products. This is all that has been processed abroad is coming in now as fully full products. You've got vehicles, aircraft and vessels, which are number four there. Number five is original equipment components. Number six is base metals and articles of base metal. These are classifications in the tariff book. And then number seven is plastic or rubber and articles thereof. Number eight is clothing and textile, which is in the tariff book, it's chapter 11. So clothing, textile, footwear, and leather products. They are number eight in terms of value of goods that come into the country. And they also contribute, on average, 2% of the total value of goods that we import into South Africa. The next slide it illustrates the 2% part. But if you check this slide there, it says out of a port of entry, how much in terms of percentages would clothing and textiles contribute. So in the port of Durban, for instance, which is the main port of entry for clothing and textiles, the imports contribute to something like 1.07% of what that port handles at any given time. So if you look at something like East London, for instance, it's 0.02. Durban International Airport is 0.02. And then Port Elizabeth is 0.10%. The main port is Durban. That's where our resources are currently concentrated in dealing with this problem. That also shows, the graphic shows what is depicted on top there. Our role, Chairperson, in combating commercial fraud is SARS. We've got a responsibility to oversee different programs aimed at stopping unfair trade practices that threaten our economic stability, restrict the competitiveness of industries in the world market, and place the public health and safety of the citizens at risk. Through implementing trade agreements, detecting commercial fraud, applying anti-dumping duties, and looking at trade in endangered species like abalone and all that, we strive to do all these things, Chairperson. And we also have got a statutory obligation to deal with tax and customs related crimes. In this regard, Chair, we have a standing MOU with the police that our investigators will conduct the investigation from the point when a docket has been opened. They've been designated as police officers for the duration of those investigations. Then they hand over the docket to the prosecutor. This is something that we're currently doing to try and ensure that you retain that skill. But if you give it to the police directly, some of them may not really understand that area. So we're trying to use the little resources that we've got to ensure that cases that we work on end up in court. So we also have got a mandate to deal with the part of the illicit economy which falls within our ambit, like what we've spoken about, commercial fraud and all that. We also did a study where we segmented the illicit economy into 17 different segments. The segments we're looking at now, this year, is clothing and textile. Then the other one is tobacco, smuggling of abalone, value attached to some electronic goods like TVs, cameras, and all that. And then motor vehicle components. I mean, the tire manufacturing sector has formally complained to the Minister of Trade and Industry about the importation of cheap tires from the East, and they feel that this is affecting their market in the country. There's a discussion at that policy level between DTI and the sector itself. But we've got a responsibility to ensure that when we're given a directive, we implement it and ensure that the right duties are levied, and where penalties need to be enforced, to enforce those penalties. We also launched chairperson a targeted enforcement action against customs and tax intervention, customs and tax transgression. We also working in close partnership with other government entities involved in trade, with organized business and organized labor, and also civil society. In trying and deal with the problem that I alluded to earlier of not having a whole government approach in dealing with commercial import fraud, we believe as far that the key driver here is partnership, cooperation, and collaboration in areas of research, legislation, policy, systems enhancement, operations and human capability enhancement between government departments, labor and business. And these are the things that we have done in accordance with that. We are now having structured meetings at a ministerial level and at a senior officer's level between ourselves and DTR. As a matter of fact, we're having a meeting later this afternoon between the Minister of Finance and Minister of Trade and Industry to look at other ways of how we're going to close that gap that has been there over the years in ensuring that there's a connection between what we do and what DTI does. We're also enhancing our cooperation with organized trade through they've got a union called CLO Trade, which is a Clothing Manufacturers Federation of South Africa, and also TexFed, the Textile Federation of South Africa. We're also having bilaterals from time to time with the South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union. They give us a lot of what I would say risk and intelligence indicators. We even talk to them about which commodities to target. It has gone to that level where they'll tell us from the research they've conducted themselves, these are commodities that are mostly undervalued. So we'll sit down with them, and if we agree, we'll target those commodities through our risk engine. We'll stop those containers and check. We also are now in closer partnerships with other customs administrations. Like I said, Botswana and Lesotho. We're battling to get that type of cooperation with China Customs, India Customs. We agreed through the India-Brazil-South Africa trilateral. They're beginning now to give us information that we require. Just as a way of example, what makes it difficult, Chairperson, to get people who are involved in commercial import fraud to court, prosecute them, and convict them is, if you suspect or reasonably suspect that goods that are coming in are grossly undervalued or the wrong tariff classification has been used, you'll have to detain the goods. While the goods are in detention, we have to communicate with our counterparts from the country of origin so that we get the original invoice. So if somebody brings a shirt at 1 American cent, the value, 1 American cent, which would be around 70 cents or so. So if somebody somebody brings a shirt like that, if we dispute the value, we'll have to communicate with China Customs and say, please verify that is this the real value. The only way of verifying is that the Chinese will go and look at the export documents, the documents that were lodged when the goods left China destined for South Africa. So normally what would happen is that the Chinese government will confirm that, yes, these goods were undervalued. They'll send us the original invoices. But those original invoices will have a red stamp across which says that this information cannot be used in any legal proceedings. So they'll give you the evidence, but that evidence means nothing because they are saying this evidence cannot be used in any court case. So what we end up doing, we end up filling our warehouses with a lot of this clothes and penalizing the importer. But you never get these importers through to the court system. You can't convict them because the evidence you've got means nothing. That's the problem that we've got in that area. The other thing, Chair, is the way the retailers in South Africa procure the products from the East. So if it's one of the big four retailers, they don't go and purchase directly. They always use a middleman, a middle entity. They've got certain agreements they sign relating to exemption. So the importer imports, in terms of that agreement, the goods to South Africa, and the retailers go and buy from the importer in South Africa. So the retailer will say, I wasn't involved in the import of the goods. The goods came here first, and I went to buy from the importer. So you can't hold them responsible, because they were not involved in that transaction of sourcing clothing in China or India and bringing them to South Africa. So we have tried to sort of close that gap. Legally, there's nothing that we can do. They sign a contract, and they get the necessary exemptions and limitations. So the risk is with the importer. So if the importer transgresses customs or tax laws, he should face the music. They remain clean. So they are the beneficiaries, yes. And these are points we have been raising within NEDLAC, that business should come to the party and ensure that we get the rogue importer out of the system and keep those that are legitimate. The other area, Chair, is like I said, strengthening our partnerships within the SADC and SACU and the Southern African Customs Union area, and ensure that our partners understand the effect this is having on South African economy. The matter is a standing item now on the agenda of all customs union meetings that we have. The issue around duty, a credit certificate, rerouting of goods, rules of origin and all that. As a matter of fact, yesterday we had a meeting with our Mozambican customs counterpart on issues relating to abuse of rules of origin. We're trying by all means to get them to understand where we're coming from. Like I said earlier, Chairperson, we launched some time ago, around 2005, a project to deal with import fraud. At that time, we were looking at a number of sectors. We were looking at the electronic goods. We were looking at cash and carry businesses in South Africa. We were also looking at clothing. So we were looking at three sectors at the same time. From April this year, we decided that we need to focus on clothing, textile, footwear, and leather. Ever since we started, we have conducted a number of raids. We running a number of investigations as we speak. We've got about four cases in court already, involving some big importers around value and tariff. So we've got something going, and we're using also the other risk tools that we've got. We've got something that we call the Customs Risk Engine. It's an intelligence system where when we get advanced cargo information, it comes through that system. So it gets analyzed, and those that are high risk get kicked out. So we know which containers to stop, like I said, long before the ship has docked at the port of Durban or Cape Town. We'll know which one to look for because of certain risk indicators. So the project that we're running now, specifically on that sector, is supported by that risk system that I'm talking about. Like I said, there were certain issues that were raised by NEDLAC. NEDLAC is saying to us, you need to develop reference pricing guidelines. A reference pricing guideline, Chairperson, means that we have to look at all these imports of commodities and do a comparison and say on average how much will a nylon shirt from China cost an importer bringing it in. So if anybody brings it below that average, we'll say no, this is undervalued. We'll push it up and say what we are saying as customs is that an acceptable price of a commodity is this one, not the one that you have given us. Whether you got it at that price in China or not, in this country we are saying this is the price. Usual business has some problems with it, but we have checked with Brazil. Brazil applied. The Brazil customs applies it. It's even tighter than what we are suggesting. They say we know it could be seen as a non-tariff barrier, but we're going to do it nevertheless in protecting our own local economy. And we're investigating that. We're willing to look into reference pricing guidelines. Actually, we've got a team already working on developing it. Once it has become policy, we'll be able to publish it, and traders will be compelled to abide by that reference pricing. And we're doing that to sort of level the play field a little bit. There's an issue around disposal of these goods that I'll talk about later. But what happens here is NEDLAC partners were worried that the goods that we're seizing, that we sell in auction, may end up coming back into the South African market and circulate. We assured them that the way we do it is if we sell goods that were illegally imported into South Africa, we sell them to a trader. We only sell them to traders that will go and sell them north of the equator, in the northern hemisphere. But I need to indicate that we haven't had an auction in a long time. And the reason for that is there's an administrative burden on us. So if you sell it to Mr. X, who wants to go and sell these goods in Dubai, for instance, we have to follow the goods and ensure that they are sold in Dubai. You have to book people into flights. They should stay in hotels to ensure that the sale happens accordingly, according to the policy. So what we have been doing lately was, if it was second-hand clothing, we would destroy. Destroying us in burning in chemicals so that it just gets destroyed. The other way with second-hand clothing is we're using them for disaster relief. When there were floods along the Zambezi Valley in Mozambique a year ago, we donated some number of tons to the Mozambican government and some NGOs to distribute to those people who have been destitute and homeless, blankets, clothing, and all that. We did it here in Cape Town during the flood. We'll give blankets, we'll give clothing, and anything that we have that we think could help the community. During the attacks on foreign nationals living in South Africa also, we provided clothing and blankets to people who were in those camps that were set up by the UN High Commission on Refugees and all that. So we use them in that regard. The rest we destroy. With counterfeit, we destroy them. What happens with counterfeit is if we suspect that a consignment that came through the port of Durban, for instance, had got counterfeit goods, we detain the goods and call the brand holders. So the licensed brand holders are normally registered with us. Say, for instance, these are Nike running shoes and T-shirts. We'll call the brand holders representatives. In this particular case, it will be a firm of attorneys called Adams & Adams. They'll send an expert to come and draw a sample. They'll go to Nike SA and check if these are counterfeit. If they're counterfeit, they'll come back, and then we'll move the counterfeit goods to a warehouse where they'll ultimately get destroyed. So we can't destroy without the brand holder saying, yes, do that. So when we destroy, we conduct joint destruction sessions so that we're both satisfied that these goods are not circulating in the local market. The other area that NEDLAC raised, Chairperson, was dedicating certain ports of entry to focus specifically on clothing and textiles. Like I said, we don't have a problem with it. I think business raised some issues, but it's an extra burden on them. They have to pay a lot of transportation costs and all that. And the registration of sector-specific traders. We are looking into amending our law to cater for that. There was also an issue linked to this that was raised around naming and shaming those that are involved in commercial import fraud. And our position has been that currently the law doesn't allow us to do that. Like to provide, because if you start naming and shaming and say Company X imports the following commodities at this price, if you look at competition law in the country, you may be found to have contravened that law. So we've got people that are looking into how do we coin that law to ensure that the local industry is protected. The other one, Chair, is criminalization of imports or customs fraud. Our point has always been that it has always been a criminal offense to bring undervalued goods, misclassified goods, or goods reflecting a wrong country of origin. And in terms of the current customs law, there are two options. Once you detect it, you can charge a penalty of up to 200% of the value of the goods, of the calculated customs value. Or you charge criminally. And I need to make an admission that historically we used to chase the money. So if somebody brings undervalued goods and I can hit them with a 20 million rand penalty, I will go for that than go the criminal route. Because a criminal case may take years to resolve. This has been the practice. And the reason for that practice was, like I said, criminal cases may take long, lack of resources internally, and the criminal justice system itself may not have been supportive of that. But like I said, now we are. We are looking at all that. If you are a repeat offender, we are not interested in your penalty. We send you straight to the investigators. You get investigated. If there's a solid case, you'll be prosecuted. So there's a shift a little bit from what we used to do before. We'll hit you with a 100 million rand penalty. If you pay it, it pushes our collection. But on this sector, we're saying these people do it again and again. It means the penalty you're hitting them with means nothing to their pocket. So we're tightening our law and our own internal procedures to ensure that rogue importers are sent to jail. The other one is the SADC and SACU, SADC and the Southern African Customs Union agreements that we have. We're trying to tighten those arrangements and ensure that things don't slip through the cracks and all that. Like I said, we have been speaking to Botswana, Lesotho, as well as Swaziland. We're having some difficulties with Zimbabwe, but I think we'll get there. The next slide, Chair, is just some statistical data, really, on number of cases that we're working on. Like I said, four companies are being investigated with an intention to criminally prosecute them for smuggling. And then for round tripping, Chairperson, is when you say these goods are going to Zimbabwe. But you don't get to the goods don't get to Zimbabwe at all. Some corrupt customs officer in Bridge will stamp the export document and say, I hereby certify that these goods left South Africa under customs supervision, even when the goods didn't leave the country. So what is the benefit of the trader is they'll go back to the receiver's office and claim VAT on the goods that left the country, which didn't actually leave the country. So we are prosecuting, we are investigating about 15 companies for that at the moment. We're also looking at investigating 14 companies for abuse of the duty credit certificate linked to the to the origin of goods. You'll recall that with the MOU with China, we had a quota agreed on goods that come from China that any importer must bring. So there are people also contravene the quota system that we investigated. We're also investigating general under declaration on all that. And there are some seizures there of clothing and textile goods that we have had. There are quantities and values. There's also second-hand clothing, which in the main is brought into the country by the NGO movement. There'll be certain NGOs who will get second-hand clothing from the U.S., from Britain, from Turkey into South Africa, so that they can distribute to the destitute. What we normally do with those consignments, when we detect that it's second-hand, many of them declare that it's second-hand clothing. South Africa is not allowed to accept second-hand clothing unless it's for a charitable cause. So all imports of second-hand clothing get detained. We detain them until we are sure that these goods are going to a charitable organization. After that, we'll then write a submission to the DG National Treasury and DG Trade and Industry, who will make the final call. If they jointly say they support that these goods should be allowed in and go to those NGOs, then they'll be released. There are instances where they say no. If there are no guarantees that those goods are not going to be circulated within the market. So again, it's got an administrative burden on us. We'll have to send people who will ensure that these goods are only used by those NGOs and not given or sold at a flea market. It's a very difficult thing to police. So there are some figures there and all that, Chair. Like I said, Chairperson, we dispose of some of these goods for disaster relief purposes. Like I said, these are some of the things that we sell in an auction for a trader north of the equator through destruction, burning. Currently, we've got about 120,000 kilograms of clothing in our warehouse. And the reason why is kilograms. Most of these clothes, when they come to South Africa, they come compressed in these big bags. So when the retailer receives them, they take them through the dry cleaner so that they look good. So we can only measure them in terms of tons and kilograms. So what the campaign that we've been running is currently, what we have done currently is that we've got a number of cases that we're looking at. These are not investigations. These are interventions. 883 interventions. Out of those interventions, we have done examinations, 259 confinements. And successful examinations in that, they yield something. They yield either undervaluation, misclassification, and all that. So 191. Which would then be sent for audit. So you'll have a team of auditors looking into everything and ensuring that they comply with all the requirements. And out of those 351 audits, 98 have yielded results in that we managed to issue an assessment where the importer had to pay money, and some of them will be referred for criminal investigation. Chairperson, that's the end of our presentation. That's the scanner in Durban. A truck drives through there to check whether there are any prohibited goods in a container. So a scanner was never meant to detect value of goods. Value of goods is a manual type of work. So in a scanner, if you doubt that there are no tires, there's a stolen car stolen in London, that container will go through the scanner. We'll be able to see what is behind the tire. The scanner was brought in to look at security aspects as well as prohibited goods. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I guess everyone is now well informed in what you're doing. Can we then entertain the presentation? I'm noting Dr. Rabi, Dr. Huang, Mr. Mabasa, and then Mr. Wanyama of MM Line. The whip will be the last. In that order, please. Come again.
Not tomorrow, we're appearing before the chef for our annual report. So they are busy doing that. So tomorrow and I think next week we're still coming. Thank you.